Okay, hello there, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz of the CFRU News Team. Adam, I heard that the Guelph Storm are in the playoffs. After scoring a couple of serious power play goals against Kitchener this week.
Yeah, back-to-back wins against Kitchener, actually. They won in town here on the weekend, and then they went to the Odd and won there. It was not too shabby, because Kitchener's in second place in the Midwest Division, in case you didn't know.
People don't know that this is our unofficial audition for the sports show on CFRU, on top of our normal duties.
If you think us listening to us talk about politics is bad, wait till you hear us talk about sports.
And that's your Guelph Storm update. Take that to the bank, eh?
Yeah, well, they are going to the playoffs, so.
Yeah, true enough.
Could take it for a test spin. We'll see. All right, Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians, which this week will be Jeff Horncastle from the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center. And he's going to help us mark the 20th annual Fraud Prevention Month with a conversation about how you can protect yourself from all that fraud out there, and there is a lot of it.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be at the bottom half of the hour. Before that, we're going to talk about a few news items from last week, including bloodbaths. Can you believe that Donald Trump is threatening political violence?
No.
Yeah. Did it on Sunday. I mean, there's no precedent for this, but we'll get into that in a sec. But first, in a huge upset, Vladimir Putin beat all his competitors and won an unprecedented fifth term as president of Russia. No one saw this coming. And, I mean, all the polls were wrong. He got 87.28% of the popular support in Russia. Nobody saw it coming. I mean, it's incredible. How does he do it? Well, cheating. Cheating is how he does it. But also killing your opponent helped. But it's, yeah, it's not surprising that Vladimir Putin won, quote unquote, won, because there was no competition. So he didn't win anything. He didn't, quote unquote, win a quote unquote election, because there wasn't really an election. There was a couple of people who he let be on the ballot. So it looked, quote unquote, sporting. But long story short, Vladimir Putin has, is now sort of the longest running head of Russian government, even longer than Joseph Stalin, who really literally hung in till he dead. He was a real sleep when you're dead kind of ruler, Joseph Stalin. And now Vladimir Putin has lapped him. So good times if you're Vladimir Putin, bad times if you're the rest of the world.
Well, some of the rest of the world anyway. I mean, of course, we're going to sound like the Western propagandists that they don't like by telling the truth. But what is interesting to come out of this is the alignment, let's say. I saw the list of congratulations, the countries that said, good job, Putin, and that included China, India, and Saudi Arabia, among others. Mm-hmm. Giving him the pat on the back, saying, oh, we're going to achieve great things together. He'll be an amazing strategic partner. And the best, I think it was from the Saudis, surprisingly, or not really. This is a very decisive victory. Like, okay, sure. And the West is like, nah, man, like, no. So I love those shots. And of course, there's several days of celebrations all tied into certain things over the past few days. But the shot of him with all the opposition, making air quotes, candidates present. Mm-hmm. And of course, that, I guess they have to show up or risk getting chucked out a window or something, right? But what was the second closest was the communist with 4%?
Yeah.
He's someone that's been around for a while. So, I mean, these are obviously, well, I was going to say tacitly approved candidates to run against him, but it's pretty much like, yeah, he also had, the communist candidate also had good things to say. Karadnov, I think, high praise for Putin in the wake of his resounding record result that some of the world is celebrating,
right? Yeah, no one was really running against him, even the opponents. It had a very Republican 2024 primary vibe where no one was running against the front runner. But I guess hoping that the front runner might just disappear and they'll be left. I don't know. Hmm. I don't even know. I mean, this seemed pretty unlikely. The question now is sort of what happens now with Russia, because obviously we're in year three of the war with Ukraine. There's a lot of potentiality for Russian interference in the U.S. election, like they did in 2016. You have I saw this rundown on TV news, you know, that Warsaw, the mayor of Warsaw announced this week that they're going to be putting aside tens of millions of dollars in that city budget to build bomb shelters because where's Poland? It's, you know, right next to Russia and Ukraine. Moldova, like Putin's bringing the Kremlin aligned regional political leader to Moscow to wine and dine him and, you know, perhaps insinuate that there's a pro-Russia portion of Moldova that Putin would like to set up shop in. And Georgia, Putin making talk about, you know, going to war and taking Georgia back and stuff. So, I mean, this isn't just a matter about Putin having a pretend election. It's part of a narrative. Part of a narrative that, you know, he's like, look at all this craziness going on in the world. That's why you need me in charge. And of course, never mentioning that he's part of the chaos that's driving the world. But it's all part of a narrative. He wants to be the strong man. He wants to bring a Russian empire back, not the Soviet Union. He's thinking even further back in time than that. And he's got his eyes on these things. And despite the fact that, you know, Ukraine is holding its own and Russia, you know, Ukraine reported last week that there were about 6,000 casualties. I'm not sure how true that is. You know, good guys could do propaganda too. But I mean, the fact of the matter is something like 315,000 Russian troops have died, been captured, or were casualties, wounded in the war with Ukraine so far. That's not small potatoes. And it just, you know, it's kind of a bloodbath over there and shows no signs of abating. And Putin's putting money on Trump and Trump aligned people who don't want to spend money on a war in Ukraine to win out. And I think that's what this year is going to be all about, is this holding pattern, this wait and see pattern. I mean, that's a lot to digest there, but there's definitely a narrative here that he is the strongest. And while America is mired in, you know, democratic, small d democratic infighting between the two old guys, I mean, Vladimir Putin isn't a spring chicken, but I guess maybe compared to Trump and Biden, he looks a little more virile. But, you know, that's the narrative he's going to work across. Like, democracy is a mess. So you need a strong man, and I am that strong man.
Oh, but he'll insist that the whole thing was democratic. One example was that they were kind of boasting about the online voting. And it probably won't help the online voting cause in the rest of the world. It was like 8 million people voted online. And what did he say? It's very transparent and objective, not like the fraudulent system in the U.S. So, I mean, yeah. And any chance to take a shot that he will. But, I mean, you've mentioned the war in Ukraine. The first order of business out the gate for Putin is to find more meat to send to Ukraine. Presidential decree dropped, I believe it was today, you know, obviously a bit of a time change. Estimating many, many more thousands, the minimum being 250,000, going to be conscripted to serve his purposes and to do his bidding, whether it's Ukraine or the other places you mentioned, Transnistria is possibly one, Georgia, because he has been emboldened by this. And we've seen it. There was a big celebration in the Grand Russian Palace. It's the place where the gold doors are. That's it's in the Kremlin. It's inside the Kremlin. When I was there, it said CCCP on it, but it's been repurposed. And that's where this is how I see it. There's this weird hybrid between the czarist approach and Soviet style. We're seeing the Soviet style in the elections, air quotes again, but also not co-opting, but using these symbols of the past to sell himself. And I mean, it was a full house. Like, he doesn't normally speak in front of people anymore. For a time there, he was so terrified, and probably still is, that somebody will give him the same treatment that his agents have, or allegedly have, or what have you. So the victory lap over the past couple of days has been like, look, you know, everything's great, and Crimea's back in our hands, and he's giving out these pearls of wisdom, and the chosen Muppets are standing there clapping. It's, you know, but this is what we're seeing, this image versus what's actually. I did see a clip of the BBC reporter that's still there. I think he may be the only one. And the woman from Russia Today was just berating him and openly like, oh, you think this isn't fair. And it was just like, I don't know if they keep him around just to mock him or something, because there's not many journalists left there, at least from, let's say, the larger services, or there may be some independents there, but which way they swing, it's hard to say. But yeah. And the second thing I'd heard today was that he's the first trip outside of Russia, which he doesn't do often, is going to be to China.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is huge, right? That's I'm not sure if China is trying to maneuver into possibly coming up with a peace plan. There's been rumors of that, and things leaked out that China is interested. I'm not sure how much of a leak it was, or was suggested that China may be the broker that's needed, because it's not going to be anything else. And there's few people, if any, that Putin will listen to outright, but China might be one. So that's, you know, the geopolitical lines are clear, the divisions are clear, and it's unless it's along the lines of Israel-Gaza, unless somebody can come up with something, it's just going to keep on going, right?
Mm-hmm. Apparently India is another option. Modi, you know, is... he's got some, let's call them issues with a fully democratic rule of order of the day.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, there's definitely a Cold War going on. Putin wants to consolidate. Like, he wants all the tough guys together. He wants, you know, Xi, Modi, MBS. He kind of wants his own, I was going to say axis, but that may be a little too provocative a phrase. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he wants to be a world player. He seems remarkably unconcerned about how many people he's losing in Ukraine. He's talking about invading other places. And I was reading a lot about, you know, sort of where people who are experts on Russia think this is going. And like, even the experts don't know. There was one guy who's like a Russian historian at Oxford. He's like, well, you know, there could be a populist uprising, or there could be an elitist uprising, meaning like the people could rise up, or the people who are surrounded.
Oligarchs
and things. But I mean, he basically controls their purse strings, and that's a risky gambit. Despite everything happening, you know, the loss of life in Ukraine, the sanctions, life in Russia seems to be marching on. There was some sort of civil disobedience around the election. There was, you know, people filling, you know, ballot boxes with paint. People did the noon hour protest on Sunday, lining up at polling stations all at the same time, which was sort of Alexei Navalny's last wish, as a form of protest against Putin. That happened. It didn't seem to have much of an effect. So, I mean, we're in a real kind of state of logjam in Russia, where he seems to be. I mean, you don't want to say somebody's untouchable, because nobody's untouchable, but they just feel like there's an untouchable quality to Putin right now. There is kind of a logjam. I think all eyes are going to be on, I hate to make it America-centric, but I think all eyes are going to be on the United States this fall to see which way that election goes. And that may be the point where the logjam breaks, because if Biden wins and he gets, you know, holds on to the Senate, gets the House back, the spigot gets turned on for Ukraine funding again. Or maybe Mike Johnson grows a spine and decides to just hold the vote. I mean, that seems like an even more remote possibility, but that seems to be where we are right now with all of this.
Yeah, and the Stalin comparison is pretty apt, because it's Putin till dead, right? Like, he's, what did he win, 6 years? But it will be until he's done, either removed or deceased. But then, of course, as you say, what's next after that? I'm sure there are lots of people jockeying for position in that, like the what comes next battle, because it's obviously not Navalny. It won't be Navalny's wife, partner, who was in Berlin for the remote voting, or the let's say the exile voting. But
yeah,
that number was lower, but it's still, who knows what went on with the ballot box between Berlin and Moscow. I'm sure something did.
Not to get too much deeper into this, because we have to move on to the next topic, but I mean, there is a big question, like, what happens in Russia the day after Putin dies? Say he never goes away, and he's going to die eventually. There's no clear successor. It's exclusively the Vladimir Putin show. So, like, what happens when he goes? It's going to be a mess. But that's a discussion for another day. Mm-hmm. Speaking of 70-something weirdos.
I was saying, speaking of a mess.
Speaking of a mess. Donald Trump was at one of his ghastly rallies on the weekend in Ohio. He's probably seen the clip a dozen times at least of him saying that if he doesn't win the election, it's going to be a bloodbath. He says he's talking about the American auto industry, and he was talking about the American auto industry before that. And then he said that that was going to be the least of it. The bloodbath he was talking about is the country. Also, I mean, completely skated over the fact he said he was going to put 100% tariffs on cars manufactured outside the United States. And it wasn't exactly clear what he meant by that, if that was like, if the whole car is made outside the United States, or if, because most cars have like foreign made parts in them, at least. But also 100% tariff, that's like doubling the price of a car, and Americans are going to be paying for that, not whoever he thinks pays for tariffs. But leaving that aside, it's just, you know, more fun and games for Trump, and he probably almost definitely isn't having fun, because on Monday he has to pony up $454 million if he wants to continue with his appeal of the decision in New York to penalize his business interests there. In a shocking turn of events, apparently nobody wants to trust Trump by giving him $500 million. So
cannot be underwritten, right?
He cannot be undersold,
unwriterable. I don't know what they call it, but I thought one possibility was Musk. I think I've said this already on the show, but I feel that there, I guess you can't create a super PAC to pay that bill. It's a separate channel, but it's chump change for Musk. So he could take care of it, but that's coming to a head like very soon. So we'll see, because there's designs on Mar-a-Lago and possibly Trump Towers. So. Mm-hmm. So he's got all that playing out and all the charges and all that. And yet still he's so tremendously popular. The bloodbath comments, it's not hard to say. Was it literal? Was it figurative? I don't even think Trump knows. He's saying stuff, right? When he detaches himself from the teleprompter, who knows what will come out? 100% tariff. So the guy doesn't like taxes, but he's going to put 100% tariff on something. It doesn't make sense. Comments about Barack Hussein Obama again. And he seems to think Biden beat Obama. Like, there's a lot there's the jibber jabber in there. There's a lot that's not making sense to what Trump says. So it's not just grain of salt, it's bucket of salt, a lot of stuff. And what was the other? So the extension of the bloodbath comments was, I don't think you're going to have another election in this country if we don't win this election. It's like, what are you saying by that? You're saying if you don't win and Biden wins, it's going to be undemocratic, or you have to win so you get your way. Like, is the logic there is very little logic to it. But going back to topic one, though, I mean, one thing's for certain: if Trump wins, Ukraine is probably screwed. Not completely, not to underestimate Europe and whatnot, but it just needs to be seen that they're in trouble.
Yeah,
they are in trouble already, but it's a Trump White House will change that dynamic completely.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's I'm not even sure what to say about it. You know, I understand that there's this sort of like isolationist bent in Trump and Trumpism and Trump supporters, and you know, people don't want American money to go to the war, but you know what? There are a couple of ways to look at this. Number one is they're not giving money to Ukraine. They're giving money to American companies to make guns and bullets. And then they're sending, instead of, you know, them delivering to the Pentagon, they deliver to Kyiv. So it's like an American job. It's essentially an American jobs program. It's you know, war as socialism. The other side of this, too, is, you know, if you don't like paying to help Ukraine keep Russia out of their country, you're not going to like paying for World War III, and you're not going to like what that looks like either. I suppose if Trump's president, he could just like side with Russia and they can have a little, you know, Munich deal or whatever. But I don't think that's a world anybody likes, anybody's going to like, even a Trump supporter. So, I mean, that's the flip side of this, too, with the money issues. Well, maybe not the flip side, but another part of this is having a president who's completely destitute and desperate for cash. Look at what, you know, this deal Jared Kushner made in like Serbia to buy like an old bombed out army base there and turn it into like a luxury resort. You know, you have these appendages of Trump who are like cashing in. Like Steve Mnuchin was talking about it, but getting a bunch of guys together to buy out ByteDance, the company that owns TikTok. You know, after like the House passed the motion to ban TikTok unless it's sold by the Chinese company that owns it, sells it. There's been no progress on that, but of course, who rides to the rescue? Steve Mnuchin. So hey, do you want this highly popular and influential social media platform owned by Steve Mnuchin, who was not only Treasury Secretary under Trump, but he was the guy who, you know, paid for a lot of crappy Warner Brothers movies between 2013 and 2016. But leaving that aside, there's a whole get rich scheme here, and Trump, in desperate need of $500 million, like, you know, even if he gets it from Musk is already a huge government contractor. You know, is there not an expectation for some kind of like payback? Anybody who like makes that deal and says like, yeah, I'll underwrite you, or yeah, I'll loan you this amount of money. What are you going to do for me? I think it's probably fortunate that the amount of money he needs to pay New York State is probably so massive, because he's probably not going to find anyone to cover it. Unlike the $90 million he needed for the E. Jean Carroll case, which has been put up by, you know, of all cockamamie companies, Chubb, the security the security firm. But yeah, there's something very dangerous about having someone who's desperate for money on a national ticket and has a history of literally doing anything for cash. You've heard of Trump steaks. You've heard of Trump water. You've heard of Trump University. I mean, he'll put the name Trump on anything if you bring a bag full of cash to his house. So, you know, that doesn't look really good on a presidential candidate.
But and that's his whole thing. That his whole claim to fame is he's such a great businessman. That's it. That's all he's got. And he doesn't even, as we are seeing, doesn't even really have that. But it is also about the friends and the payments to the friends, whether it's arms companies or you name it. That's what it's about. And, you know, we see it on a smaller scale in Ontario, but the politics are the same. That's his style. I guess, I suppose we should talk about Biden a bit, but let's talk just a little bit about what happened, because this past Tuesday was, I don't know what they call it. It's like not so super Tuesday, but both of the candidates have met their delegate ratio now, that magic number.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of passed quietly, or quieter than Super Tuesday, but there was more primaries. Where were the states? Arizona, Florida, Kansas, Ohio. And weirdly, I don't know if there's a story there, but there was a Florida primary for Biden, or there was supposed to be, and they just kind of canceled it and gave it to Joe. So I don't know what happened there. Maybe they just said, yeah, forget it. Interest seems to be waning, although there should be a process in place, I guess. But it was just kind of like, eh, Joe's got it. Let's just do this. So I don't know. Because that's not trending, really. It just sort of passed without incident. It's not really going to give anybody a bump like Super Tuesday. The talk of Super Tuesday is always like, oh, who's doing really well? I think Biden may have got a slight bump from his State of the Union in places.
Mm-hmm.
Just because that happens. I don't know what the Trump bump is going to be, if there was one, because he's... As we mentioned, all the problems and issues going on with him, there's no kind of resounding thing, I think, that's going to pull him out of that, other than the, you know, the cheers from the base. There's no, you know, when you're saying the stuff about the, what was the other comments too about the animals? This is the radical left focusing on his comments. Let me be the radical left to focus on the immigrants aren't people. Was it something like that? Immigrants, they're, I think they're animals, or it's just like, what is that? Right? You think you're going to endear yourself to people by saying things like that, though they're not actually people, they're animals. Like, so where is it coming, right?
It's going nowhere good.
The
thing about these primaries now, it's now a matter of sort of like, and we saw this on in Ohio, it, you know, Sherrod Brown. I mean, it was always Sherrod Brown was going to be the Democratic candidate, but I mean, he's probably the most vulnerable Democratic senator this cycle, and they selected the guy who was endorsed by Donald Trump, and it wasn't a blowout. There were three people looking for the Republican nomination in that Senate race, and the Trump guy, whose name I can't remember, but he won with just over 50%, and then the two guys split the other 50%. So that's where kind of that race is important, or where the elections on Tuesday is important, is these are like sort of down ballot races, and who's going to be, you know, if there's a Republican who is moderate looking and not like explicitly Trumpy, is that going to be more problematic for the Democratic candidate as opposed to someone who's just going to be like a salivating MAGA person like Matt Gaetz or J.D. Vance or whoever, like name your bozo. That's kind of where this is. But yeah, it's a Biden Trump rematch. We've kind of known it for weeks now. It's official. So, we're going to be covering this all the way through. And we'll leave that there for now. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come right back, we're going to talk to Jeff Horncastle from the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
That's a band called Ducks Limited out of Toronto. The LP is Harm's Way, and the song is Deleted Scenes. It might be something that might make an appearance in the future on end credits, maybe. Adam?
That sounds great. What doesn't sound great is all the people around here are getting ripped off by scams. There was a thing in the police press release on Wednesday of a couple of local people in their 80s who lost thousands of dollars to a scam. in 2023, it was the scammiest year ever, as long as they've been tracking these things. Things keep getting scammier and scammier, as it were. People are losing millions of dollars. And as you'll hear in this interview, the amount of fraud we do know about is kind of the tip of the iceberg, because obviously a lot of people sometimes feel embarrassed that they lost money, especially if it was like a sextortion scam, you know, people stealing intimate photos, or if it's a romance scam, or if it's you know, something involving family. Not every fraud gets reported, but at the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center wants you to report all the fraud, because if they know about the fraud, they can refine their tactics, they can help investigators, they can prevent other people from being ripped off, and make you, the members of the public, more aware. So appreciating that we are a terrestrial radio station, although we do have a podcast arm as well. We hope to reach people who still listen to old-timey radio and make you more aware of sort of what the dangers are with scammers. And so to do that, we recruited Jeff Horncastle to do this interview this week to talk about how scams work and how you can protect yourself, and how asking questions and being skeptical is not necessarily a bad thing when somebody comes and asks you for your money. And also, I can't stress this enough. If somebody says they're from the government and they're asking you to pay in Apple gift cards or Bitcoin, that's a giant red flag. But we're going to get more into that in a sec with Jeff Horncastle and the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center. We're going to hit play on that interview starting right now. Okay, Jeff Horncastle, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Appreciate it.
Hi, Adam. Really happy to be here.
Well, I want to kind of get the obvious question out of the way. And it's okay if you don't have the answer to this, but it was a matter of curiosity to me. Why is March Fraud Prevention Month? What's the deal with March?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know what? I don't have the exact answer to that. March has been Fraud Prevention Month for 20 years. It's the 20th anniversary of Fraud Prevention Month this year. And
Reasons why I asked.
Yeah, going back, I can't tell you exactly why March was chosen.
That's okay. It's just interesting. Getting into sort of the real questions I wanted to ask, though. There's this growing... It is growing, because I'm referring here to the press release that was sent out at the end of February. $567 million was lost to fraud in Canada in 2023, which was an increase of $32 million increase, not from $32 million in 2022, and then an increase of $187 million from 2021. So what this is painting the picture is that the problems around fraud are getting worse, not better. That's fair to say, right?
Very fair to say. The increase in dollar loss, or reported dollar loss, is not linked to, unfortunately, an increase in victims. From what we're seeing, fraud in general is more sophisticated, very technology-driven, right? New environments like social media have emerged in different ways where victims, unfortunately, or Canadians are being targeted on a larger scale. Whether we're looking at phone calls or, you know, social media, internet, fraudsters are always finding new ways to target Canadians.
Trying to figure out why this is sort of this dramatic increase is sort of attributed, because I look at it one of two ways. Number one is I think there's more awareness that of fraud out there, but at the same time you have this increase. So there's that portion of it. The other portion of it, too, is, and I think you just kind of alluded to this, is that fraud is now an international crime. Scammers don't have to look you in the eye when they're taking your wallet. And they don't even have to be, like, in the same city limits as you. Is that a factor in the increase, that this is like an international crime now?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's one of the biggest challenges for law enforcement, right? So that's why we at the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center want to focus on prevention and getting that messaging out, what to watch for, how to protect yourself, you know, in the cyber environment. And even, you know, if you're getting a phone call, right, you have to know what to watch for. And that's the best tool to fight fraud is, you know, equipping yourself with the tools necessary to prevent yourself from being a victim.
Mm-hmm. Looking at the tools, and obviously I want to get to that, but in terms of like who gets scammed, like is there, I guess, is there a particular group of people who should be worried about getting scammed, or is this something everybody should be aware of? And especially, and we can get into this too, but people who think that they, because they are so kind of, I guess, in the know and are listening to interviews like this and are reading the articles and reading the tips, they can never get scammed. So I guess looking at this two ways, who is there a group of people you look at especially who you're worried about being the victims of scammers, and how much should the general public be concerned that they can be a victim?
Yeah, that's a great question, Adam. From what we're seeing based on reporting at the CAFC, everybody's at risk. You know, we certain types of fraud, like the grandparent scam, for example, might target seniors, obviously, more than other demographics. We're seeing newcomers into Canada maybe being more at risk for government impersonation fraud, so an extortion phone call or even a phishing text message claiming to be from the CRA. If this person doesn't know exactly how the government of Canada operates, then they're automatically more at risk, right? So, but long story short, everybody is at risk. Some people believe that they'll never be scammed, like you said, they'll never be a victim. It's important to stay on top of, first of all, what technology is out there, what methods fraudsters are using. We document over 30 types of fraud, so very challenging to remember how each type of fraud works. But if you're on top of, knowing that the fraudsters are using compromised social media accounts, they're using search engine optimization, they're using fraudulent ads, and even deepfakes, like we're seeing more recently, then we know what to watch for, right? So, like I said, everybody's at risk. If you feel you're equipped with the knowledge and try to share that knowledge with somebody, a loved one or a family member that you think might be more vulnerable than yourself.
And there's a level of sophistication things, which I think you're kind of getting at, is that there is the phishing, which is like we're casting a wide net, killing it with the phishing metaphors. But, you're casting a wide net. Whoever you catch up with it is that's who you get. But then I remember there was an alert from our local police a couple of weeks ago to alerting local companies that scammers will essentially like target your company, will like study you, exchange emails with you, and then will develop like invoices from like your suppliers that look like real invoices, and will like wait until like the accounts payable person is away on vacation, because that's how closely they've been studying things, and then send out all these invoices like need payment urgently, and whoever's like the substitute accounts manager will start paying those fake invoices. I guess the question here is, do you have any idea sort of like what the proportion is like between like the scammers who are just casting that wide net and how many scammers are like that sort of deeply committed to the con? Like, is there a kind of, number you can put to that?
Yeah. So what you described is a variation, one of the most impactful variations of spear phishing.
Mm.
A little different than phishing, because phishing is, click on this link or download this attachment, right, to either infect your device or get you to provide personal information. With spear phishing, and specifically for the variation you described, in a lot of cases the criminals will infiltrate the network of one of your suppliers or contractors and actually intercept a real invoice. What they do is they request that the payment that's due on the invoice be sent to an alternate bank account, most commonly by wire transfer, and not knowing the accounts payable department of the victim company. If they send the payment, then they're sending the payment to the criminals, essentially, right? So one variation of phishing. And to put a number to that, number two on our list based on dollar loss in 2023, 58.2 million was lost to spear phishing. And I'm not going to say only 668 victims, but when comparing the ratio, very low number of victims when looking at the amount of dollar loss, right? So a very impactful fraud, specifically targeting businesses and employees.
And reporting, I mean, I as you were saying, a lot of people want to report and they want to go to the police because they think they can get their money back, or they think that the scammers will be put in jail. And that may not necessarily be the case when you're talking about the international fraud we're talking about. But reporting is about more than sort of the seeking of justice. This allows you to help track trends and to track like the prevalence of certain schemes. You know, there's more to reporting than just the idea of getting justice, correct?
So that's, you know, you touched on part of our mandate. Yes, we collect the information, share the stats, and, you know, use that information for prevention initiatives, right? So what you could be reporting could be something new, and then we have to alert Canadians about, and then, you know, the message spreads from there because we work with local law enforcement in Canada. They, you know, share messaging on social media or whatever the case may be. On top of that, we work with law enforcement across the country, not only across the country, but internationally. So we link information. We're able to link information together. So if there's a victim in Guelph and another victim in BC and a third victim in Halifax, the information can be linked together in the central repository, which is a Canadian Anti-Fraud Center. And it allows us to share that information with our law enforcement partners, like Interpol, Europol, or, you know, wherever. So all this to say is that we share the information with law enforcement, and we can provide linkages between reports.
Okay. Good. I wanted to share that in particular. I want to talk about a couple of examples, as learning opportunities. And one of them, again, to refer to a Guelph case, and I don't mean to keep throwing Guelph cases at you, but that's where I live. There was a case a couple of weeks ago about an older man here in Guelph who was involved in a crypto investment scheme, a cryptocurrency investment scheme. And he had been warned by his bank that he might be being scammed. Like, they didn't know for sure, but it just, like, how much money he was pulling out and putting into this company had his bank worried. And he kind of waved the bank off. He's like, "Oh no, I'm not being scammed." One would think your bank telling you that you might be being scammed would be something that would click in your head. But I mean, understandably, people think differently. But I guess my question here is, the warning was issued, and the victim in this case, unfortunately, didn't seem to hear it. They thought maybe they were a little more, I guess, informed than they thought they were. And I guess how do, in sort of your best advice, how do you sort of combat that when someone seems unwilling to entertain the a possibility that they might be scammed, might be being scammed in the midst of a scam, I should say?
Yeah, that's a great question and very challenging in a lot of cases. So looking at investment fraud in 2023, $309.4 million was lost to investment fraud. And we estimate that over 50% of that number was to crypto investment frauds. Very similar to romance fraud in the sense where the scams can last for a long time, a long period of time, right? So this victim may have been investing for a couple of months, and he may have had, you know, so much money invested into this company, and that alone makes it harder to believe that you're a victim, right? Because you're believing that your investment, you're seeing your investment grow on this fraudulent platform, which is very well done, unfortunately, by the way. You know, a lot of it is organized crime. So, you know, you see your investment growing. But unfortunately, when it comes time to ask to withdraw those funds after, you know, a few months, then that's when you realize you've been scammed. So important to try to avoid this from happening from the beginning. Because like I mentioned, the longer you go, the longer it is to make yourself believe that you've been a victim. You know, for family members trying to convince a victim that they're being frauded, they're being scammed. You know, when looking at investment fraud, refer them to the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center to get a second opinion, maybe discuss it with the police. The Ontario Securities Commission is a great resource to verify legitimacy of an investment platform. We're seeing the same challenges with romance fraud as well, where, you know, a family member is trying to convince their mother or father, or, you know, whatever the case may be, that they're a victim of a romance fraud, but very challenging. You know, there are tools that you can utilize. You can do a reverse image search online to show that, you know, an image has been used with a bunch of different names online. It is an effective way to try to convince them, and refer to them to the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center. You know, we have experts on the phone that do this daily. Like I mentioned, confidential, and it never hurts to get a second opinion.
Mm-hmm. True or false, if you're having like a business deal, or you're talking to somebody about a business deal and they talk about getting paid in crypto or gift cards, immediate red flag, right? That seems to, from my reading of some of these frauds, it's like if someone's asking you for a gift card instead of, you know, a wire transfer or cash, that's a red flag.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and we're seeing that in various types of fraud, you know, whether it's a business deal, job scam, where you're asked to, you know, accept checks, retransfers, and transfer the funds by gift card or cryptocurrency. Remember that if you're accepting funds and transferring them elsewhere, you could be contributing to money laundering. You could be a money mule. So to answer your question, yeah, the fraudsters are using cryptocurrency because it's because of the difficulty that law enforcement has in tracing, right? So,
right.
But 100%. Yeah, never. And, you know, the government will never accept crypto or gift cards either.
Right. That's probably especially key. And this is a question that occurred to me as we were talking. But, you know, so much of banking is, I mean, it used to be you'd have to go to the bank to do anything. Like, you have to go in person, and there were bankers hours, like 9 to 5. And of course, now, you know, banking, you know, so many of us bank on our phone. I bank on my phone. I guess how much of this would not be an issue if we still had that kind of like human touch, if we still had to like go to the bank and the teller knew our name and they sort of knew our spending habits and knew that like every Friday we come in and deposit our paycheck and then we take out $100 to go buy groceries or something. I mean, I realize we can't go back in time, but I mean, how much of this is just sort of like a missed human connection because so much of our lives is automated now?
Yeah, and that's another great question. We saw the pandemic contribute to this in this way as well, where a lot of Canadians changed their ways, where, you know, they may have been going into the bank directly. They changed their ways because of, you know, they may have been confined, right, for a while, and they had to do online banking, and they just got into that habit. They maybe got into the habit of doing more online shopping, communicating with family members more, right? And they kept those habits. So in general, the cyber environment has contributed a lot to fraud. We, you know, 75% of overall dollar loss was from cyber enabled fraud. So, even when we're looking at it, identity theft and identity fraud, you know, we've seen an increase in that as well over the last few years. And, you know, generally our information is just more accessible, whether it's through data breach, a phishing campaign. So to answer your question, yeah, the cyber environment has contributed to fraud immensely.
The other example I wanted to address, and it actually involves me. I wasn't scammed. I just want to make that clear. But it involves like a scam that does happen, or these phishing scams where you get a message, you get a text, or you get an email that says, we are Canadian Customs, we have a package, and we need, you know, such and such amount of money in order for it to clear customs. I actually had that experience, except I actually had something coming through customs. It was Blu-rays from a boutique Blu-ray company, to, it, you know, expose you a little to what my life looks like. But, you know, I did get those text messages, and I got the phone call from DHL saying, like, hey, we've got your package, but, you know, you need to pay X amount in customs. And I was able to verify that it was the package through the confirmation number from the company that I got. But this is kind of like the world I think a lot of us live in, where we're kind of hyper aware that if you get a text, even if you are expecting a package from the United States that might need extra funds to clear customs, you get that message, you automatically think it's a scam. So I guess if I find myself in this situation again, or other people find themselves in a similar situation, like, is there a proper process we go through to make sure that we're truly, well and truly answering customs and not a scammer?
Yeah, that's another great question. And this is another prime example of fraudsters trying to capitalize on vulnerabilities, right? Mm. So they know that the majority of us are ordering online, waiting for a package. So they might be claiming to be Canada Post, like you mentioned, or, you know, another courier company. So if you get an email, always avoid, or a text message, like you mentioned, avoid clicking on the links. And if they claim to be Canada Post and you're not sure, go verify your Canada Post tracking number with the merchant you made the purchase from. Verify it that way. And then even go a step further, look up the official phone number for Canada Post. Give them a call. Give them the tracking number. They'll be able to give you the information you need, and you've avoided clicking on a potential malicious link, right? So even if you're getting an incoming phone call saying, hey, you have to pay this amount to customs, always make sure you're making that outgoing phone call. Look up the official phone number. Phone numbers can be spoofed, right? Mm-hmm. Even if it says mm-hmm. Canada Post and the Canada Post phone number is on your call display,
right,
it doesn't mean it's them. So right. Only when you're making that outgoing call is the only way to confirm that you're speaking with the official agency or company.
And I want to look at this from the other way, too, before we wrap up, because I think in my point of view, during this example I was just talking about, you know, you don't want to feel like you're catastrophizing. You don't want to feel like you're living your life in fear of this nebulous blob out there, the scammer. And I guess, you know, is... how do you sort of make sure that you're kind of not psyching yourself into like kind of having like no interactions, you know, because you're worried about being scammed? Like, how do you avoid that kind of catastrophizing? And maybe that's not even something you at the Anti-Fraud Center are really worried about, because you're trying to get out the awareness. But, you know, I think just from my point of view, I think that is something I worry about, that, you know, am I too alert for scammers, and is that like making me like paranoid or crazy or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, it it's a good question. You definitely, like, our purpose is definitely not to have Canadians paranoid and afraid, yeah, right? But with that being said, you know, we always say take five, which refers to taking 5 minutes. Take 5 days if you have to verify, you know, just knowing, taking the time to look into the offer, whether you're thinking about making a purchase with a merchant you've never dealt with in the past, take your time to do your research. That's not being paranoid. That's verifying. It's taking the steps, right? You know, we touched on crypto investments. Well, if you are interested in investing in crypto and you don't know much about it, then you're at risk, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know what you're doing and you're going in kind of blind. So always make sure that you're educating yourself, doing as much research as you can, reaching out to the Ontario Securities Commission, verifying if they're registered. There's a website, aretheyregistered.ca. Excellent right. website to verify if an investment company is registered or not. You know, I touched on phone calls. You know, you get an incoming call and somebody's asking you for your social insurance number, driver's license number, whether they claim to be your cell phone company, a financial institution, government agency. Letting them know that you're going to call back is not being paranoid either. It's protecting yourself from being a victim, right?
Right.
And I mean, if you get a strange message on social media from a family member, or, you know, somebody on your friends list, a little bit out of the ordinary, pick up the phone and ask them if they sent that message. Just being knowing that accounts get compromised very often, and keeping that in mind is going to protect you from being a victim. So with all this to say is that, no, you don't have to be paranoid, but always take the steps necessary to kind of verify, you know, be your own investigator type thing.
I like that. Take five. Jeff, do you want to give the contact info for the Anti-Fraud Center again, just to make sure people have it?
Yeah. So I do want to mention that, you know, if you have been a victim, very important to contact your local police. So your police both and the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center. I will mention that you do not have to be a victim to report to the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center. So even if you have been a target of any type of fraud and you have information, you know, phone numbers, email addresses, payment information, it's all good information, useful information to share. Like I mentioned, our toll-free number is 1-888-495-8501, or you can report online as well at antifraudcenter.ca.
Well, Jeff Horncastle, I think that was a lot of really great information, and we appreciate your time and the work of the Anti-Fraud Center, because we know it's a big problem, so thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And once again, that was Jeff Horncastle, and please do follow his advice and get in touch with the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center if you are scammed or think you're being scammed. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to call back either. Don't let them pressure you. Don't let the bastards get your precious crypto.
And scammers, be aware. If I get wind of anything from you, look out. I'm coming. You can take that to the bank. Cue the Liam Neeson and Taken. I will find you.
I don't know who this is, but I'm telling you, I don't have air ducts. That's it for this week's show. We hope you liked it. You can listen to us again by downloading our podcast version every Monday from our website, opensourcesguelph.com, or on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or from your favorite podcast app like Apple, Google, TuneIn, and Spotify. You could stay connected to us on social media. We're on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, and we're on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. I shall return to CFRU Wednesday at 3 p.m. for the movie review show that I co-host called End Credits. And you can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or check out my news and politics site at guelphpolitico.ca.
I'm Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Twitter, and Blue Sky. And if you're joining us at our regular time at 5 p.m. on a Thursday, please stay tuned for the volunteer playlist.
Yes, and that's one of the many great programs that you will hear on this station, CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. As for this show and its particular set of skills, it will return next Thursday at 5 p.m. for another edition of Open Sources, and we will see you then. We'll be right back.